We give you all the viral stories that are just about to drop. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. If you keep scrolling, scrolling, scrolling and you're never gonna stop, then please, oh please, oh please, oh please don't let this flop. From stupid songs and dances, all the cultural advances, we will cover them from bottom to the top. Just please, oh please, oh please, oh please, I promise you'll appease our please, oh please, you please don't let this flop.
Hi, I'm EJ Dixon.
And I'm Brittany Spanos. Welcome to Don't Let This Flop,
a podcast about TikTok and internet culture brought to you by Rolling Stone.
EJ, I wanted to tell you about the PowerPoint party.
I know. Thanks for inviting me, by the way.
It was so much fun. I mean, obviously, I don't know. You've seen probably a lot of the PowerPoint party TikToks, right?
I have, yes.
Yeah. So
it seems like a blast and a half.
Yeah. For anyone who hasn't seen, a lot of people on TikTok make these, you know, they make videos of these parties that they have where every single person makes a different kind of PowerPoint. Sometimes they're educational. Sometimes they're just like silly about friends. Like, it's just like you're doing little mini presentations with all your friends. So my friends and I get those TikToks all the time. And we decided to finally do one. And I have to say, one of the best ideas we've ever had.
Okay, so what was your PowerPoint and what were the PowerPoints that your friends did?
It was nice because everyone took a different approach to it, which I loved. And mine was about the actual group chat. So we have a group chat and it's called Garbage Tornado for many reasons. Mm-hmm. And I basically made a PowerPoint about how we would all do in a Yellow Jackets type scenario, minus mm-hmm. the cannibalism. So it was, I did each slide kind of in order from who would die first to who would survive the longest. And it was skills, setbacks, outlive, outlast, like how long they would last on.
Where did you rank? Where did you fall on that spectrum?
I'm like the second person to die. I have asthma. I hate being outside. I just have no survival skills whatsoever. My only real skill is I like can shoot a gun. I grew up in the Midwest. And so I'm like, I can maybe hunt if we needed to.
You can do. But you can shoot a. Everybody in the Midwest knows how to shoot a gun.
I just had a grandpa who was like very Republican and liked guns.
I see. Okay.
So I've been to like I you know, I mean I haven't shot a gun since I was like 13, but I'm sure I could pick it up.
It's like riding a bike
in a forest.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I was second to die. But I did a bonus cannibalism slide. And in that one, I'm like the first one to go because I would simply offer myself up. I would not want to participate any further.
Because you just wouldn't have the energy to like fight.
It would be too much. Like, who has the time? I'd be like, literally, just eat me. Like, I welcome the sacrifice.
That's like, I once saw a TikTok that really resonated with me where this woman was like, If somebody ever hijacks a plane, like step one, just kill me. I don't want to deal with this.
Me. That's literally me.
That's me too. I feel exactly the same way. Kill me.
So it was fun. That was the group chat one that I did. One of my friends did one that was our like basically making the case that some bears are actually just people based on a lot of viral bear videos. And that the people in the bear suits are astronauts in training.
Why are they astronauts?
Because it's just like the way that they have to live. I don't know. The
is
whole
this like a common conspiracy theory or is this something that you guys just created like whole cloth?
No, this is her conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
Based on just like, honestly, I was convinced by the end of it. And I'll send you the slide. I was like, well, this might be true. Just because there's a lot of videos of like bears walking. There was a bear in the Polish army. Did you know that?
Yeah, I've seen that video. Yeah.
Shout out to Wojtek. So that was a really good one. One friend who works at a number of really fancy salons did one about all the celebrities who don't tip her.
Oh my God, who was on the list? Who was on the list? Who was on the list?
I can't get her fired. I cannot disclose. I did promise her I would not.
Give like a Dumois type hint.
I know. We told her to leak it to Dumois, but I will leak it to you later. But there were some people from some famous 90s TV shows who've gotten free salon, free facials, and they get free facials if they post, right, about the salon, and you should be tipping your esthetician.
Okay, that's telling me, that's giving very much one out of six of the cast members of Friends.
90s teen TV shows.
Okay, that's giving very much either Saved by the Bell or Beverly Hills 90210.
We'll discuss later.
Okay. I'm so excited.
And it was like a lot of influencers I had never heard of and stuff like that. People who would typically get
right.
free facials, you know. And yeah, I mean, it's really good. Another person did like all their Twitter nemeses, like all the people they hate on Twitter. My friend Carrie did one that was about the Carl Jung tropes in Courtney Love's Instagram. That took a lot of explaining for all of us because none of us knew who Carl Jung was. Mm-hmm. And
he's not going to come up on this podcast again.
No, he will not come up on this podcast.
So don't worry. If you're like worried about whether or not we're going to talk about Carl Jung, no, we're not. Don't worry about it.
You should do a PowerPoint party with your friends. It's like, here's all the reasons why my co-host Brittany is the hottest person alive.
I should do that. In fact, I probably
Topic
will.
Done.
I
probably done.
Speaking of crazy things that young people do, yeah. You're watching Euphoria, right?
I am watching Euphoria, and I'm watching hours of content each week after because it is all over my TikTok feed, it is all over Twitter. We've already talked about Euphoria Fever and how there are all these memes. It was blowing up even before. The show is so big and people really care about it. But something even juicier is swirling. And we're trying to figure out if there's trouble brewing in Euphoria High. So it all started with reports that actress Barbie Ferreira, who plays Kat, a plus-size teen on a horny journey of sexual discovery, walked off the set. Of course, a lot of these reports are mostly rumors at this point. Barbie has not fully addressed it, but there's a lot that has come up across different sites and across different reports on various like gossip sites and also non-gossip sites. So the reports allege that Barbie was upset with Kat's storyline for the season.
Kat's storyline for the season?
Well, we're only at episode 2 and there barely is one. Mm-hmm. She has started to date a very, very nice guy named Ethan.
The guy from last season.
Yes, she started mm-hmm. to date him at the end of the season. And essentially all that she's really done so far in the first 2 episodes, of course, there will be a 3rd episode that airs before this episode airs, but it's not much. It's basically just like how she's kind of unhappy and she then realizes that it's mostly about herself and not about Ethan. So the reports allege that Barbie came to blows with the show's director and writer, Sam Levinson, who writes and directs every single episode, only person. Demois also received similar rumors of on-set tension between the two. Levinson allegedly cut a lot of Kat's story and lines this season after mm-hmm. she walked off. And Barbie was also noticeably absent from the Euphoria premiere, citing some loose scheduling conflict. But all these reports came after she was the only cast member to not attend the show's premiere.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense.
So Sam has also not made a public comment on this, but it's kind of clear something fishy is going on with Kat's storyline. And again, it's been pretty stagnant. She's getting into that sort of fat side character purgatory of being left with another self-empowerment story plot as the other characters get to try fentanyl and flirt with the internet's new boyfriend, Angus Cloud, and fuck in bathrooms. And she's here, you know, trying to figure out like what it means to be empowered.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate because her storyline was the best last season.
I loved her storyline last season. I'm curious if what we're seeing now is sort of the beginning of that tension or beginning of like what we haven't seen the full season. So that's like the difficult part about knowing what exactly Barbie was upset about, because it could either be what's happening now or it could be stuff that we may not even get to see for the rest of the season about what Sam wants for Kat's storyline. Mm-hmm. So, of course, this makes the next thing that happened even more side-eye emoji-inducing. Sydney Sweeney, who plays the sweet but needy Cassie, who yearns for nothing but love, told The Independent that she had to put her foot down on several scenes that called for her to be topless. She's already been tits out for the first couple episodes of the show, and for a lot of the first season, she's probably one of the, I believe, the only actress who is usually showing you know, her boobs in a lot of scenes.
And yeah. I mean, that's why I ultimately stopped watching, because I mm-hmm. just found it really, gratuitous. And she's a great actress. Like, yeah. it's nothing against her performance. I think she's incredible. And, yeah. you know, that performance, you know, doesn't even, like, serve her talents the best. Like, I thought, you know, White Lotus really used her very well. But she, like, that scene where she gets high and then has an orgasm on the carousel, like, I cannot think of anything more unnecessary than that.
Yeah.
So the fact that, like, they wrote even more naked scenes for her this season and she had to
so
be like,
many.
And she had to be like, yo, I'm not doing that. Like, that's pretty unbelievable to me because there are yeah. a lot.
Yeah, I mean, on top of all this, the show itself is kind of jumping the shark. So there's a lot of things about the season that are really good. It looks amazing. They basically brought back this Kodak film that was, you know, no longer being produced. And Kodak went into production to make this film again for the second season of the show. So it looks beautiful. This is like a Visco Girl wet dream. Like, it is gorgeous. But, and the music is amazing. The music supervision budget must have been like fully insane. They have just so many like really old classic songs playing through it. And for someone who's as nerdy as I am obsessed with all the music on the show. But many fans have complained about Levinson's writing. Again, Levinson is the only person writing the show, noting that the episode penned by actress Hunter Schafer that aired during during COVID, like there was a Christmas specials that they aired, one focused on Jules, Hunter Schafer's character, one focused on Rue Zendaya's character, basically to just tie people over before they can actually film the full second season, since it came out in 2019, pandemic hit, and then they couldn't film for a really long time. And Hunter wrote the episode about Jules herself, about, you know, her experience as a trans woman and bringing that into her character and inspiring this incredible, you know, special episode. And many fans have pointed out that was the best episode that's been written so far, especially for the character of Jules. More controversy has swirled over a redemption arc for one of the show's parents, Cal Jacobs, played by Eric McSteamy Dane, whose storyline for the first season was entirely about him sleeping with a trans teenage sex worker, Jules, and then making her life a living hell. And they basically give 30 minutes of background on his character being a closeted teen jock, and how sad it is that he became pregnant with his wife. His now wife became pregnant with his first child the day after he finally kissed his best friend. So there's been a lot of controversy over that as well. Because I mean, it was funny because a lot of people were just like, oh my God, now I kind of like Cal, blah, blah, blah. Like, I wish he had been able to stay. I mean, especially because it's played by like, he's played by like a hot boy, and like his best friend is like played by another. And it's like,
People were shipping them, I saw.
People were shipping them. People were just like, you know, like, wow, I wish he'd been able to stay with his friend. I can't wait until he sees the friend again, blah, 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 all this other stuff. And it's kind of like a sort of like, well, you were duped into believing that this is like now a sensitive character that you should be rooting for when he is the villain of a lot of the story.
The thing that I really find very strange about Euphoria that I found strange last season that's only now kind of bubbling up that I did not see a lot of last season was the fact that Sam Levinson is a white man and he is writing, he's single-handedly responsible for writing like all of these, for telling the stories of, you know, all these marginalized characters. Yes. And like, I do not feel personally that like white men are, you know, should not write outside of their experience. Like, that is not a perspective that I hold. But just the idea that, like, he is single-handedly controlling the narrative and he doesn't even have, you know, like, other – there aren't other writers on staff except for Hunter Schafer, who you mentioned, who are, you know, helping to build these perspectives.
Well,
like,
Hunter only wrote that one episode. That's the other thing, too. It's like, this is, again, still the season's storyline for Hunter's character, Jules – is a stark contrast from what, you know, what like her self-penned episode was. So that's
right.
Another.
My point is more that it shouldn't be a white man single-handedly crafting these narratives.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the controversy and a lot of what's come up about his writing was definitely made worse by the film Malcolm and Marie that he released that starred Zendaya and John David Washington. That movie stars two young Black actors, and John David Washington's character is a filmmaker who's struggling with white critics. And that movie is entirely about and based off of and very, you know, both very clearly and very explicitly about Sam talking about white critics of Euphoria. So it's very weird for, I mean, that makes it even weirder when you kind of see him working through his problems through Black actors in a movie. And I think makes a lot of the writing in this season feel fishier than it did in the first season, because now that he's been so explicit about how he was using this film, about a Black filmmaker struggling to come to terms with a white critic's interpretation of his work as a white filmmaker. You know, it's just, it's like, it's weird and fucked up. It's like a strange sort of like, why are you playing dolls with these two Black actors to work through something you should just go to therapy for. But with the clear and rumored strain happening behind the scenes, many are left wondering if the show has girl boss too close to the sun. A lot of people think that the show, this might be the last season. A lot of people are comparing this to Glee and to Ryan Murphy, Sam to Ryan Murphy, just about, you know, Glee was very famously left with a lot of drama constantly, especially between Ryan Murphy and the actors. A lot of the on-set drama between Ryan Murphy and the actors led to different storylines being shut down or ruined or character arcs completely messed up. Like, that's very, that has been told by many of the actors since then in books that they've written or interviews that they've done, that Ryan Murphy like would single-handedly kind of destroy a character plot if they were not getting along with him. So it seems very similar to that and kind of also just as messy in terms of the way that the plots are developing right now, but it's still early enough to be saved. Maybe Sam Levinson should consider bringing EJ and I on for the theater kid perspective. if they want,
I don't think they need that. I don't think they need scenes of people getting super high and getting froze fruits and then walking into history class and showing off their froze fruits to their history teacher. Like, I don't think that's necessary.
They don't want to see a bunch of kids drinking Dr. Pepper at a theater cast party in someone's basement.
I will say, and this is foreshadowing because this is not going to be the first time that we mention this particular individual this episode. I think it's really funny that Jeremy O'Hara has got involved in the Jeremy Euphoria O'Harris rumors.
Yeah, Jeremy O'Hara works as a consulting producer on Euphoria this season and has been sticking himself into a lot of the drama with it. And
what's not fun is seeing people make up things about someone who's very close to me, who's been the best boss I've ever known, who's one of my best friends, whose son I'm the godfather of, on this app based on conjecture and gossip websites. Please stop doing that. Here's what you need to know about the Euphoria set. It is one of the safest sets, one of the most fun sets I've ever been on.
You know, he posts a lot of videos. He sort of refuted some of the gossip, but also, you know, again, it seems like this is a lot more personal than I don't know how much Jeremy would be. I mean, Sydney has gone on the record with issues that she had with taking her top off for the season. I don't think that should be ignored.
Yeah, I agree.
And we don't know about Barbie. And again, she has not explicitly said that I've had issues with Sam. I'm sure she also kind of would like to protect her job in case she'd like to keep it. But I don't know. We don't know. And so Jeremy has weighed in a little bit more than he probably should have on it.
We'll return to that later.
We'll return to Jeremy later.
This will be a recurring theme for
us. America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
We decided to do something a little different this week, which is straight people, gay edition.
Straight people, gay edition.
Because gay people can be straight, too, in their own way.
That's beautiful.
So Chris Olsen and Ian Paget have broken up. Do you know who either of those people are?
I didn't until you sent it to me. I don't get served that shit. I don't.
I mean, I barely do. I barely know who they are. But they are both famous, and they've both been pushed on my For You page at an alarming rate over the last few months. And I do not follow either of them. I still do not follow either of them. I also have very few details. I will try to piece together as much as I can about who they are. But they are very, very big on TikTok. And because of that, and because of how many videos I get served by both of them, I have been accidentally following along with their breakup for a month now, even though it was officially announced like 2 weeks ago. So I am officially beyond help when it comes to being on TikTok.
So who are they and what sort of did they represent like as a couple?
So Chris and Ian are an influencer couple. They have a joint YouTube channel and they have very, very popular TikTok and Instagram pages, but separately not joint pages on TikTok and Instagram. I mean, they just kind of make sort of annoying couple-y content along with just like a lot of just other random sort of stock influencer content. You know, it's just like dances and like, you know, videos like set to all the weird sound trends. Like they're just kind of on top of it and they have a lot of big brand deals, and they're just like very famous in their own right with that.
They so seem so bland to me. Like, yes. I don't understand the appeal.
Yes. I mean, I'm not going to be the person to tell you why you should be following along with them. I'm just giving you the information on why they broke up.
I appreciate that.
But they have been apparently, they have been dating for 2 years. So like many other very popular creators, Chris has a spam account, which is another form of content that I have been getting a lot from him. And a spam account is like a Finsta, except it's public and it's on TikTok. And it's basically a place where popular influencers have a second page and they kind of just make whatever content they want. Like, it's a little bit looser than their public pages, especially if they have a persona to upkeep on those public pages. So for some reason, a month ago, I remember I looked at the comments on one of the pages. I think I just was trying to piece together who this person was. And all of the comments were asking if him and Ian had broken up. So there's a lot of comments that were just like, we haven't seen you and Ian together in a really long time. You know, we just like want to make sure you're okay. I think he had posted something kind of sad and like it was like a mildly depressing video. And people were just like, oh no, like what's going on? As people do. So I have now decided to temporarily develop my own parasocial relationship with them to further investigate because I love mess. And as you know, again, once I saw a West Elm Caleb TikTok, I looked into it. Once I saw this, I had to look into it and suddenly learn everything I could about them. And so
you know
stopped.
Everything. Your investigative skills about like TikTok couples are just like unparalleled.
I love it. I believe a gift in telling when someone has broken up on Instagram without them having to post sad content.
They should make
there's always a tonal shift that I can always tell.
They should make the what was the Jennifer Love Hewitt show where she could talk to ghosts? They should do that about you.
Yeah. Yes, that's me. But yeah, anyway, so the content has changed. They're no longer posting together. They're going on red carpets together, apparently. Or, like, not together. They're going on red carpets separately, apparently. People just sort of assumed that, like, Ian was traveling, so that's why him and Chris weren't producing content together. I just became very involved in this in a way that is, frankly, sick. So on January 7th, they announced their breakup on Chris's official TikTok page, doing that headbombing meme. You know the one where it's, like, one person's headbombing,
da,
and they
da,
pan
da,
out.
Da, ba, 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 da. Duh. Yeah. Duh, 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 duh. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's like, you know, anyway, it's captioned when you break up but are still best friends. And then they explained it in a YouTube video that I truly do not plan on watching. That's much longer than the type of content that I want to watch from either of them.
For now, we've just decided that it would probably be in our best interest to be moving through the world unromantically. We're okay, and we want you guys to be okay, and we just wanted you guys to know.
But they did that a few days later, and they continued to make a very alarming mix of meme and emo content on their mini pages that I keep watching. It's, you know, it's very straight influencer couple behavior. It's very cringe. I find Chris's spam page very entertaining, though, so I will not hold it all against him, at least. Like, I do think that, like, there is a glimmer of good content coming from them. But honestly, being a social media famous couple seems overall awful, and I think I'd rather just get ghosted.
My question is, like, how is it going to affect their income if they got famous as a couple? Like, how does it affect their income and their brand if they break up?
I have no idea. I'm assuming that it does on some level. It seems like they're both individually very famous. Like, their videos without each other have been doing really well. They have been posting. And maybe that sort of was a trial run. Maybe that was, like, part of the reason why they didn't immediately announce that they were breaking up because – or immediately break up because the content that they were posting separately was also probably, like, a test of, like, how well they can do without each other. But, I mean, they do, again, have separate TikTok pages. They have separate Instagrams. Like, the YouTube channel is really the only thing that they share. And they do fairly well on their own. I mean, I wish them the best. They seem like nice people, at least.
I don't wish them the best.
Oh.
I don't. I don't wish them the worst, but I don't wish that. What I wish them is, like, I wish them some, like, quiet time, like, to sort of pull themselves together so I don't have to see their content.
You know? I'd like to understand why I was getting their content so much in the first place. And yet, here we are. Maybe the TikTok algorithm knew that it would drive me insane and that I need to learn every single thing about them in order
and
to do
did.
This episode. And I did. Am I better for it? Absolutely not. I'm worse.
But I wanted to talk to you about Future X. Have you heard of Future X at all?
I unfortunately have.
Unfortunately?
Yes. I've heard them. I've heard their music.
Right. But, so Simon Fuller, who created the Spice Girls and American Idol, he's like this big British pop producer behemoth. He created this band called Future X, which is being promoted as the world's first TikTok famous band. And basically, it's a group of extremely hot people culled from all over TikTok. They were all asked to audition last fall under the hashtag Next in Music. There are various, you know, races and ethnicities. The only thing they have in common is that they all look really good in crop tops. And here's some of their music, which is bad. It can't be denied. This kind of love is not the love the story told you all about. This kind of love is not the love that's gonna make your parents proud. But it's the love. It's bad. It's bad. I mean, there's nothing else to say. To me at least, it's interesting because it's sort of a combination of the hype house, collab house model, because they're all basically working together in a house in Malibu right now making content in this giant mansion.
Yeah.
And this classic pop group model of the Spice Girls and the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC, where it's, you know, it's not really an organic band per se. It's just a bunch of people auditioning for a producer and being, you know, groomed for pop superstardom. And, you know, they're recording their first album. They have a brand partnership with Elf Cosmetics already. I went pretty deep into their TikTok and I haven't really seen, it doesn't really seem like anybody's trying to give them much of like individual personalities the way the Spice Girls and the Backstreet Boys had, which kind of differentiated them all individually while also making them work as like a cohesive unit. They're just kind of all hot and make content. I don't know. I mean, do you think this is going to work? Like, is there still space for a Spice Girls, Backstreet Boys model of pop stardom in the music market?
The issue is there are too many of them.
There are seven. I should have mentioned that up top. Yes, there are.
Yeah.
I believe it's seven.
Too many of them. Like, I mean, there are like, you know, K-pop groups are large. And I think that's kind of like under the model. But like, again, like they have the people in there have no distinct personality right now other than like what they look like. And so other than like, you know, with K-pop, at least like you're getting some personality if you have like a seven person group and, you know, you can kind of attach from there. And there's a little bit of a better writing machine behind it. But yeah, I mean, this is pretty similar. It reminds me of the way that every single pop group was made in the early 2000s, you know, the making the band engine that existed post like the NSYNC and Backstreet Boys and Spice Girls, and how there was every TV show was about creating a group. You know, this is a very common way that pop groups are made. So there's no, I can't really like, you know, there's no way or reason to look down on that part, because every single great pop vocal group has been made by just like some show or some like audition thing. Like Spice Girls famously came from like a wanted ad in a newspaper looking for auditions. But I don't know, there's something a little bit like lifeless about the way that they're being presented and about how the music is being made. Like at least there was some sort of interesting things happening musically with, you know, Backstreet Boys being one of the first acts to work with Max Martin, who is one of the biggest pop writers of all time, and, you know, getting his career off the ground with that. I think, you know, there's nothing really interesting about the music itself. But I don't know. We'll see. I mean, it could work out, but it doesn't seem like people are really excited about this immediately. So many things that like come from TikTok remind me, like so many things that are like the like inorganically come from TikTok remind me of Josie and the Pussycats movie. You know?
Like, such an underrated movie.
Such a great movie, but I feel like it was like honestly such a I don't know, something about just like the way that the world is presented in there and very like kind of cold and steely, and also just like the hidden messages and the songs and the way things are marketed that way, like that's what this feels like. I feel like if you rewind the music, it's going to be like by Elf Cosmetics.
That's probably the primary reason why I don't think this is going to work out the way they want it to, because it does seem like the ideation meeting was like, okay, kids like K-pop, kids like TikTok, let's sort of use this model and bring it to TikTok. But they, I don't think it took into account really that kids on TikTok are like very sensitive to bullshit. Like they can sniff it out from a mile away. And like this is probably the most explicit. There's all these accusations of like industry plant with all these acts that break out on TikTok. And this is probably like the most explicit example of an industry plant there ever was. So I cannot see this really taking off.
Yeah, I mean, there is sort of, I think maybe the closest thing, now that I think about it, to Future X and like the way that they were formed is that there is, I mean, I really like this boy band. I know people have like different opinions on them, but I really like Why Don't Me, and they are products of Vine. Like they are literally like, but not in this way, you know, they didn't have Simon Fuller, who was like one of the biggest names in the pop vocal group creation history, but they were basically just like all touring separately on all those, like, you remember those Vine meet and greet tours? Someone who had started one of those Vine meet and greet tours ended up being like, oh, all these kids who can sing, we can put them together in a group. So they have like a little group called Why Don't We? But I don't know. I think it's also just like the process itself of the bonding nature of being in a group and things like that are usually in development for a really long time. Like they are, I feel like this is kind of haphazardly being promoted too quickly.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, they had the splashy rollout, like giving people an exclusive to sort of announce that they're here with all these canned quotes from all the individual members. But like, I don't know, they should put them in the house and be like, come up with personalities. Like what are your personalities? Like who are you?
If you're anticipating keeping this group together for a long time, I mean, all groups break up because of the issues that I think this group is going to feel earlier than most groups, which is that you're touring with them. You have to spend every single day with this group for the next how many years you end up being together. You know, and I think it doesn't seem like they have any sort of rapport going on or any connection with each other.
It all looks like a hostage situation, like all the TikToks like they make together.
Yeah, it looks like a bunch of Sims were just thrown in from different people's games and are now just like forced to dance.
They should make a pool and fence them in and see what happens. That's like, really dark.
A tiny green diamond added to each of their heads, I would be like, I would not even look twice. I'd be like, okay.
Make a wall around the bathroom and then watch as they just like jump up and down for a couple hours and then pee themselves and cry. Oh my God. Okay. I love The Sims. And anyway, let's do Obsessed. We haven't done one in a while.
No, I don't think you understand. I'm obsessed.
Yeah. I just wanted to briefly touch upon something exciting for Sydney Sweeney because, you know, I hope that everything goes better with Euphoria and Sam Levinson. But people have discovered or rediscovered that Sydney Sweeney has an amazing TikTok account called Sid's Garage, where she's basically just been like working on a vintage car on her own for like months now. She has like a 1969 ruby red Bronco that she's been fixing up and like restoring. I don't even know the proper terminology for what you do with a vintage car, but like she's literally, it's just like her welding and shit and like fixing the car. And like, I don't know, it's like crazy. It's crazy to me when people do that.
Like I did not think I would find this interesting, but because I could not give less of a shit about cars, but I cannot stop watching it because she is so beautiful.
She's so hot. She's so hot to watch. I'm like, wow, I wish I could fix a car. I wish I was like cool and hot like that. Like that's like, it's incredible.
It's awesome.
Such a good account. She's awesome. I love Sydney Sweeney. I wish her the best. She has a great career already. You know, like you mentioned, I mean, White Lotus was my favorite show from last year. And so she was incredible on it. She is really, really good on the season of Euphoria in spite of the storyline that they are giving her, which is whatever. But like she's doing really, really well with it, though. And she's awesome. And she can fix cars. Like give her a car shop. I would watch a show that's entirely just Sydney Sweeney welding shit.
Honestly, me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
I would watch my husband is like always asking me to watch shows like Top Gear. And I'm like, no, fuck you. Like, why? Like, fuck you for even asking me that. Like, it's offensive that you would even ask me to watch.
Yeah.
That like a show about cars. But if Sydney Sweeney were in it, I would be like, yeah, let's do it. Yeah. That sounds great.
Yeah. And in the most recent one, the car was finally drivable, which was like a very exciting thing. But I'm also hoping that she continues to work on the car because I would like more content.
Let's do Himbo. Are we ready to do?
Yeah. Himbo of the week.
So this was actually a rare Himbo fan suggestion from our guest last week, Leah, a.k.a. at Jewish Brat.
Shout out to Leah.
Shout out to Leah. She concluded her interview by saying she had a Himbo of the Week suggestion. She was like, you guys should talk about Axel Weber. And at first I was kind of like, maybe this is like a little old to talk about because he really went viral like earlier last month. But like, yeah. I mean, he fits the Himbo category. And there's also kind of a new wave of discussion that's going on around him now. He's kind of going through a similar like TikTok hero to TikTok villain pipeline as the Women in the West Elm Caleb saga did.
So what's the hero story? Tell us about Axel.
So here's the hero story. Axel is a 22-year-old TikTok star. He's from outside of Atlanta, Georgia. He's so cute.
Very, very cute.
He's he so kind of looks cute. Like
he gives me very like nerd boy in like a 2000s teen show or movie. You know, like, I feel like he would fight for Hillary Duff.
Absolutely. To me, he reminds me of this guy I had a crush on in English class in ninth grade, but I didn't know how to express it. So instead, I bullied him for reading the sentences out loud too slowly during class. It never worked out between us. But he has, like, giant brown eyes and floppy hair. He's kind of got, like, David Dobrik vibes. Real boy next door. Mm-hmm. And he auditioned – well, he first went viral because he moved to New York to kind of make it big as an actor. And he got this really tiny apartment. And he went viral for making these videos of his, like, super tiny apartment and his life, like, on a shoestring budget in New York. And he auditioned for Juilliard, the world-famous acting school. And this is despite him never, like, having acted before or not having a ton of acting experience. And last month, he uploads this video reading Juilliard's admissions decision.
As you are already aware, due to our callback process, you are no longer under consideration for admission for fall 2022.
Then it goes on to say, maybe next time, don't do an English accent, try Scottish or Australian, or no accent at all.
This video went crazy viral. He got a lot of celebrities got involved. Charlie Puth, who honestly kind of sucks on TikTok otherwise, he made a very, very sweet video telling him not to worry. He didn't get into Juilliard either. Jeremy O'Harris, callback, as they say in the improv community, who wrote Slave Play, and he had a really insane role in this season's Emily in Paris, offered to send him money. But then his followers instantly start rallying behind him and they start spamming Juilliard's Instagram with the hashtag Justice for Axel. And they also spam the school's Google reviews with 1-star ratings. So if anyone searches Juilliard, that's what they would see. And it is kind of funny to think about some snooty Juilliard admissions person like having to sort through all of these comments on Instagram. But it's also like, and nobody really talked about this at the time, like what obligation does Juilliard have to admit somebody just because they have a whole bunch of TikTok followers?
Right.
Like, and why would someone with millions of TikTok followers need Juilliard to launch their career anyway?
Yeah.
Like, it's just kind of ridiculous that people rallied behind this, you know, very well-off, famous white man, like, to such a degree.
Yeah.
And it's kind of smelled like a publicity stunt. And some people believe that's exactly what it was. They started doing like detective work on Axel. This is where the villain thing comes in.
Yeah.
They saw he'd gone to an NFT launch party with Vinny Hacker, who's a member of Hype House, which we mentioned earlier. And it's TikTok's very famous content collab house. There's a series on Netflix about it right now. So they thought he was in Hype House, even though Hype House denies that he's involved with them. They found out he came from a pretty wealthy background and people started accusing him of cosplaying as poor because a lot of his content had been about moving to New York and trying to make it on a shoestring budget. But apparently he's like fairly well off. This is an allegation that gets leveled against like a lot of content creators. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. Like his family might have money, but that doesn't necessarily mean he has money.
But also, like, I think the apartment that he moved into, like the really small apartment, had already gone viral.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, like this is an apartment that went viral on like real estate TikTok. That was just like, this is the smallest apartment in New York.
Yeah.
Or something like, so I think that also kind of plays into a lot of the kind of stunt level part of it, but I'm not, I need to be 100% sure on that. But I do think there was something behind his apartment where it was like previously.
Do you think he got the apartment? This is not a theory that I've come across, but do you think he got the apartment to go viral on TikTok?
Maybe.
I mean, he's a very established, like, this really launched him into the stratosphere. Like, he's got like a manager, he's got a modeling contract now. I mean, he's well on his way to becoming like a very prominent TikTok creator. And he was before he made this Juilliard video. He had like more than 2 million followers. But all of this controversy prompts Jeremy O'Harris again to make a string of videos, like probably 6 or 7 videos. Like,
yeah.
Talking about essentially classifying this as like a piece of theater.
Honestly, I love theater and I love TikTok because it's great theater. That's great theater, you guys. That was a durational performance that child has done, like in a tiny apartment, apparently.
I don't understand. Jeremy O'Harris spends so much time on TikTok. He spends way more time on TikTok than we do. And it's kind of our job to be on TikTok.
Yeah. Lots of responses to things, lots of, you know, like a lot of theory, especially because he's involved, especially with a lot of shows right now, like Gossip Girl, Emily in Paris, and Euphoria. He tends to put a lot of gossip on TikTok about the shows. He'll kind of do some, like, with Euphoria, he was like responding to theories constantly. Same with Gossip Girl. So he's very, very active on all social media. This is the same thing that came up with our train boy, Francis.
It's like, true.
Does that mean
that
this is inauthentic? Does that mean that, you know, because Francis had a modeling contract and, like, you know, other stuff in his life prior to the train videos, does that mean that the train love is inauthentic? Whom's just to say? I mean, I think, like, the reaction has been, like, a little bit much with everything on the internet. The reaction was a little extreme.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
You know, I thought that, like, you know, there are some parts of it that were pretty earnest. Like you said, the Charlie Puth video was, like, very, very cute. Juilliard is not and should not feel obligated to let him in. I don't know his acting chops. They know better than us. That's the thing. We're not seeing that. It's harder to translate that on TikTok because acting on TikTok tends to be pretty cringe.
I mean, if he is, yeah. And it also isn't really part of his brand, you know, like he's not doing like the like role play videos that like the cringy role play videos that go viral every once in a while. Like he's doing like pretty seemingly authentic, like living in New York content. Brittany, you and I talked about him being a freegan, but I looked at his old video. I don't think he's a freegan. I think he just like gets cabbage. He buys produce off the street on like a rug. Am I missing like some old freegan video?
No, I don't think we were calling him freegan when we were talking about it. I think we were just like assuming that we were talking about the street cabbage and we were like, maybe he's a freegan.
But he paid for it. I think that's the distinction here. It is pretty fucking disgusting though that he just buys cabbage on a rug on the street. Honestly.
I mean, that also sounds like every early 20 something, you know, boy.
To buy cabbage on the street. Like, am I being
classist? Well, just like doesn't know how to like buy produce or feed themselves in their tiny apartment.
That's true. So, I mean, he made a video.
Because also, who just like buys cabbage?
He made a video about his last video is about how to cook a meal in an air fryer, and it turned out he didn't like turn it on right.
Yeah. It sounds like someone who just doesn't know how to cook for themselves or buy groceries for themselves.
But our podcast editor, Dan Stein, is a Juilliard graduate. So I'd be curious if he has any Axel insights or intel on the admissions process.
Yeah. Dan, will you fight for Axel to get into Juilliard?
I don't fucking care if he gets into Juilliard.
Absolutely not.
I don't fucking
care.
Dan's
going to go to the Alumni Association right after this. Like, guys, I got a TikTok star for you.
Dear Juilliard, I was shocked and outraged to discover that this hot guy on TikTok who doesn't know how to use an air fryer was not accepted into your program.
I have no idea about his acting skills, but seems like neither do you two.
Anyway, he's just
I don't know what that sentence was. I just kind of was saying words.
He's ignoring all the haters. He's just laughing. He's probably going to be hugely successful, you know, as a himbo would, should, and could.
Netflix is casting him in the next big teen rom-com right now.
Absolutely. And I will watch it. I will fucking watch it twice, like I did with He's All That. I watched it twice, and I loved it.
We're going to get him and S and Ryan making out in something.
Fine.
What we're going to make, they're going to do like a Cinderella story remake with Addison Rae and him.
Good. I look forward to it. We should put him on the cover, honestly. We should just blow him up as much as possible.
Let's make him as famous as possible.
Yeah. Thanks so much for listening to Don't Let This Flop This Week in TikTok, brought to you by Rolling Stone and Cumulus Podcast Network. Written and hosted by me, EJ Dixon, and Brittany Spanos. Executive produced by Jason Fine, Bridget Chelsea, and Elizabeth Garber-Paul. Edited by Dan Stein, and original music composed by Daniel Mertzluft. See you next week.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just been handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.